Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Mike Cosentino is sitting across from me, and we've got a full deck today, shall we say.
We really do. We got some excellent guests in the studio today, and topics that are really interesting and fascinating and local.
Klaus is here to help us talk to these folks.
This goes right to the heart of what we do here at Democratic Perspective, for one thing, and the whole county supervisor thing. I've been all the way over here. I was trying to remember the last time we had a Democrat on the Yavapai County Supervisor Board of Supervisors, and I don't know when that was.
1934, something.
But we are going to let them introduce themselves this morning, and we have a Democrat running for Yavapai County Board of Supervisors for District 3, which is the district we live in. And we're excited about that. I mean, there has been movement in the party in the last several months searching for that Democrat to run against Randy Garrison, my neighbor down the street on 8th Street in Cottonwood, a man I've known for 30 or 40 years. His dad was mayor of Cottonwood. On and on. So everybody's known Randy.
So we've had Randy on the show several times, not about this election, but about earlier issues, usually about land usage and stuff. And Klaus, you can introduce yourself here as one of the interrogators. All right,
Klaus von Stadelheim.
So let's have our guest introduce themselves. Tell us a little bit about your background. And we'll talk about most of it later, but give us a hint of your background, what office you're running for, and that would be a good start.
Well, and I appreciate that opportunity. First, let me just say to everyone out there, happy Thanksgiving. You know, let's not forget what a great state and place we live in here. And it is one of the reasons that I'm running for District 3 County Supervisor. And yes, it will be an historic, Mike, race, because there's never been a Democrat woman.
I had a feeling that
and,
never was
the great
delivered.
News is Republican or Democrat, and I'm absolutely about a nonpartisan, bipartisan, let's all do this. Frankly, we are better together. I don't care what party you're in. This is an important election because it's about where we live, how we live, the trajectory of our future. And I got into it for those reasons. You know, let's face it, in a moment of great change, a historic change. And it's important for us to take a breath and ask ourselves, where do we go from here? Who do we want to be as a community, a Verde Valley? And that's why I have Steve Estes with me here today, who lives in Cornville, actually.
Why don't we, Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself. Donna brought you along as a backup or sidekick or we don't know what.
Bodyguard?
Yeah. You know, this is a dangerous studio. Yeah.
Well, as you heard, my name is Steve Estes. Been around here a long, long time, at least not compared to some other people, the late 80s. Reside in Cornville, former Water Advisory Committee member and board chair back when the WAC was big deal.
Is it the CWAC?
Yep. was the first employee of Friends of Verde River Greenway, which is now called Friends of the Verde River. They are now a very large organization comparatively, lots of staff, lots of programs and so on, but I was the first one for about 5 years, was the only employee.
How old is the organization?
About 2010.
And then they melded some organizations together.
Yes, they have.
Including
yeah.
Steve's organization kind of went in with
it. Actually, no. Verde Valley Land Preservation Institute stands on its own. We
there
had actually partnered with Friends of Verde River Greenway at the time. We shared the grants, you know, and so there was some confusion there. But ultimately, I became I became the organization stood on its own, and I was the employee. But anyway, what I'm getting at is that I have a long history in water, a long history in environmentalism. I have a master's degree in public administration with a focus on environmental policy. That's post several decade career in the human services and community mental health fields.
And you're here with Donna, so I assume you're supporting her campaign.
I absolutely do. Absolutely do.
So you have to make them leave. That's great.
Yeah, that's right. I think that we really need a new look at the county level on land use and land use planning and looking at ordinances in place and following them as best we can until there's an absolute crucial need to make those changes. And I think that something other than just development, which I'm all for. Development is about growth, and growth is about jobs, and jobs is about sustainable communities.
I think you've hit there, Steve. The big issue in the Sedona area is about growth, how it's managed, and how much of it exists. And there are some huge developments being projected for the Verde Valley. So let's talk to Donna a little bit about that. Is the issue of growth a major part of your campaign, or is it a secondary issue
for you? It's a major part, and let me restate it if I may. It's the issue about how we grow. Short of annoying to think that people would perceive those who want to be good stewards about our communities, our community plans, our vision statements, the kinds of economies that we have in our Verde Valley and District 3 in particular, as no growther kind of people, when in fact the folks that who I am at least speaking to, and I think Steve too, it's not about no growth, it's about what kind of growth. And I don't believe for a moment that it's a zero-sum game. We can have robust economies. Let me give you an example, if I may. In Camp Verde, outside of District 3, not my district, just like...
Maybe you should explain what's included in District 3. So,
sure.
So folks, I have to be reminded every time we do interview supervisors that they represent different, distinctive geographical areas.
Right, and it's sometimes a little bit funny how they're all divided up and how
absolutely
how
funny,
we
yeah.
arrived at those divisions and separations. But so my district is District 3 is all the way from Jerome, Clarkdale, Cottonwood, the village of Oak Creek, and some unincorporated areas west of Sedona. And, of course, Sedona itself. And so it is not Beaver Creek. It is not Cornville. It is not some of the places that we might normally think, oh, that would be a logical way to divide up the territory, the turf.
Especially since it was changed, as a result of the 2010 census. A lot of people that are listening, scratch their heads and say, well, we had three supervisors and all of this part, which you just mentioned, was part of this district. But as a result of the 2010 census, we went from three to five supervisors, which in a way was good for us. I mean, always politically, if you're doing the balance sheet, we got two supervisors instead of one. But still on the vote, it's still 5-2. But we do have a better or more representation, I think. So I'm just last time the current supervisor was on this show. He said there were 19 developments in the pipeline for just Highway 260. Now, that's more Cottonwood. So
actually, Camp Verde and Cottonwood, yeah.
Absolutely. And you guys are, and we're talking about growth as being a major part of your campaign. And you've started to develop your narrative already, and I've sort of interrupted that it's not.
No, I think you're setting the ground, because I think people are going to ask Donna. She's going to be representing this particular district, but you're also representing the whole county, right?
That's absolutely key. Let's face it, that's our role anyway as a supervisor, just like it was when I served on Yavapai College from 2002 to 2008. We had to look at, of course, the area, the district that we represented, and listen to our constituencies. And frankly, I think that's something that, at least from the perspective of the constituents, feel right now that is missing. But our overall goal was to build the community college in a way that served the entire 8,000-mile Yavapai County border. And so that's the case with me in terms of the Verde Valley. What happens in Cornville, what happens in the village of Oak Creek or Cottonwood Sedona, absolutely, or Jerome and Clarkdale, absolutely are tied together. We all share the same issues of our infrastructure challenges. What is it that defines our character as a community? In the village of Oak Creek, for example, our vision statements about retaining the All-American Road, which I could go on for hours about, and what we are doing or not doing to preserve that covenant for our iconic views and recreating and having an experience literally just driving on the road that makes it, and we were given the designation for, an All-American Road, to the character of focus of Camp Verde, who, by the way, is a model that I hold up, despite the fact, as Steve, you pointed out, it is not in my district, District 3, because they are leading, in my opinion, on some of the sustainable economies that produce wonderful, I have to tell you this story, wonderful, wonderful beef. It's called the Plowing Ahead Ranch, and I hold it up constantly as an example of how we can have a smaller footprint on grazing, use less water from the Verde River, have better beef with no GMO, no antibiotics, no hormones. These kids, and it's just a young couple, that drive up to, and this is a good thing about partnering with Coconino and District 1 in particular, go to the microbreweries, and many of you know that the byproduct of a microbrewery, I know Mike knows
Mike
this.
Certainly knows.
That is mash, is a product called mash. Well, cattle love to eat mash, and it makes them fat and healthy, and there's no bad stuff in it, and we're not using, as I said, as much water and grazing footprint. And so this young couple have created a wonderful example for their community to follow in the ag industry, just along with the Hausers, who have gone to low water consumption barley growing and other conservation methods, so that they can still be the multiple generations of family that they've been, growing wonderful, we all know about Hauser's corn, right, but also other wonderful goodies, and protect and sustain the robust economy well into the future, not just our future, guys, but our grandchildren's future and well beyond.
So these are two examples of the kind of growth you like, the kind of sustainable. Do you sound? I got two questions here. Do you sense that the current Board of Supervisors, when a development comes along, that and I'm confessing my own feelings here and seeing if you, there's this almost a sense of a panic or of they can't wait to approve it, to, you know, and maybe it's just being careful, maybe because there's lawsuits involved, there's big money involved in development, and but they are the county government and they have some power here, but anyway, it does, to me it seems like there's almost a sense of we can't approve this fast enough, that it's a pro growth at any cost attitude that I sense. Now, I could be wrong.
Well, let me first say to you that the reason that I'm running is because not of my personal feelings, and I want to make that clear, and we can have a discussion about that in a minute or two, but I had both Republicans and Democrats and people who didn't know whether they were ever going to vote again come to me and say, please run, and run because of this great angst that all of these communities are feeling about the disconnect that they perceive. It's not whether I perceive it or not, or you perceive it or not. The community members in each one of these communities, incorporated or not, are feeling that there's a tone deafness with issues that are important to them in their lives and their communities, whether it's the alt route, whether it's the corridor down 260, which is sounds to me like a wonderful opportunity for robust economies. We just have to balance it, and it's not that hard to do if we have the will, with all of the things that we consider as priorities for our Verde Valley lives to be sustainable in the future. I don't believe for a moment, Mike, it's a zero-sum game, and yet it's presented that way.
It is true. You're right, and that's a good call. And this is just casual conversation here, so I'm sure you have a wonderful organized president. But what about the Verde Connect? That $25 million that they got, which was great, and certainly you pointed out, I've been here since 72, at least in the area, between Sedona and Cottonwood. And, another route over the Verde River was really important to us for a variety of reasons, which I won't bore you with. But the idea is that he, meaning your current county supervisor, is getting a lot of pushback from places like Camp Verde. It seems like, at least the press makes it look this way. I haven't been to the meeting, so I don't have that real sense.
What I'm hearing, Mike, is that folks, you imagine a fairly small development company coming in, but they're extremely large and powerful companies coming in who've been able to push their way into other areas, the lawyers, the designs and stuff. So there are huge developments being discussed by very large corporations that are not based anywhere near the Verde Valley. Is that right?
That's correct. And so let's back up for just a moment. And the Alt Route is a good example, Mike, because, no, that's not in my district, and I claim no expertise in it. But I can tell you what folks have been telling me.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking through the wrong end of the telescope in terms of how we engage our public. Let me give you an example by that, what I mean by that. It seems that the public, the folks in the Verde Valley, are feeling like decisions are being made before they have a chance to talk about it, to engage in it, to have input in it, to participate in what it could be or should be. 29 years ago, as I am told, it was in Camp Verde's community plan to have an alternative route as a necessary means for transit. So it's not being opposed to a route. It's being, from what I'm hearing, opposing the way in which the matter was handled.
Might have been a good idea to start with that 29 years ago route, whatever they thought was a good.
Might have been, but now here we are in 2019, and so what to do. And from my perspective as a county supervisor, the first thing I'm going to do is go to a community and listen.
Okay.
So Donna, when a new development is proposed, I come from Montana recently, but there's a law that there has to be a public hearing before they can even submit a permit. Is there anything like that here?
There's certainly a process in place. Absolutely. The question is, how much does the community, the residents that enjoy their homes, feel they are a part of it? And until that's exhausted, for however many meetings it takes, for however many explanations are required, for however many presentations a would-be developer or applicant needs to provide to a community, for whatever stipulations or mitigations of the plans need to be made, so be it. And I think that there's the malaise and angst and, quite frankly, anger across the Verde Valley, because that process, at least from the perspective of the citizens, does not feel like it's being engaged. I worked in development. I love development. So for those of you who might be listening saying, oh, she wants open space only and no growth, nothing could be further from the truth. I had the great good privilege of working. My last project was here, actually, in Sedona, the CVS, and I have the scars to prove it. I was the community liaison person for the developer,
Steve met with the community. About what he thinks about the balance of development, because you've worked in the environmental area for so long. You're supporting Donna for her position as our supervisor, who represents all of us, I think, except for Klaus lives out of the district. So why are you supporting her? What is the right balance? There have been huge public meetings protesting proposed developments. give us your perspective, why you're supporting Donna rather than someone else.
Well, I support Donna because she supports a balanced approach. She doesn't support a no-growth approach. She doesn't support an all-growth approach. I support her because she is concerned about the process. We have seen this a lot. You can develop processes and ordinances and means by which, you know, you're supposed to statutorily function. However, we also see those structures and those processes misused or underutilized not made totally available to all the people all the time. We've seen circumstances in which certain interests get a bigger and stronger platform, and others are otherwise marginalized. And the El Rojo Grande experience was a perfect example, where the developer had hours to put up an entire huge PowerPoint and make all kinds of points in their favor. And when it came time for the people, you had 2 minutes or 3 minutes each. And so the strategists got smart, and they took their hours-long PowerPoint and they cut it up into one-page segments, and everybody in that audience had 2 minutes to give their page,
right.
And they got the entire thing out there, and they got it defeated. The people spoke. They found a way to use the system. However, the system sometimes finds ways to keep that, you know, from you, because they have a great deal of interest in.
I don't want to use the name, Steve, but I'm told that compared to Rojo Grande, there are much larger, more powerful development organizations who want to build large areas in Verde Valley. And the story on them is that they can't be resisted. Between their lawyers and their economic power, they tend to get whatever they want wherever they are.
Well, that's exactly why I'm running. If that fear is out there, it's unfounded, because, you know, our country is based, as messy as democracy is, our country is based on listening to the people, and we are the government. Just like an organization only exists because it's made up of the people. And so is the case with our government. And it's time for us to speak in a voice that is compelling enough, irrespective of whatever the big money is from wherever it is, to be at the negotiating table, quite frankly, before the process begins, so that they know. For example, and I use it again here in Sedona, there's a beautiful community plan. There are 13 areas of what they call community-focused areas, and there are community benefits and community expectations. And wisely, the review staff team of the city shows a would-be developer that, and they have an opportunity, when I was working and consulting in those days, to hire, for example, someone like me to help them align with the community plan. And if they don't, then there's mitigation that needs to happen, and that's a negotiation process, and it can be worked out. You know, developers aren't bad people. They're just developers. And what happens is we get divided into these really unfortunate us against them camps, when it should be, how do we do this together if it's an appropriate fit for the community that it's trying to enter? And I would say El Rojo Grande was not.
Close.
Can a supervisor just reject a development because he or she feels that it's inappropriate for some reason? Or is it that if the developer follows all the legal steps that you have to go along with it, because it's, you know, he followed all the legal steps. So do you have really the freedom to say, no, we don't really like that?
Yeah, that's a complex question with complex answers to it. And I think that there is a way to address, you know, we have a law, Proposition 207, that says we must protect individual property rights. And I think for the most part, that's what supervisors are speaking about when they say, oh, we're going to be facing a lawsuit. I want to mention to the listeners that there's another side of that very same Proposition 207 that says, unless it is to the detriment of a community and does not align with the community's interest, And so we need to have the courage to figure that out as developers and as community members and as elected officials. How do we navigate these waters in a way where it is not a zero-sum game, where we invite robust economies in that align with community plans? And, oh, by the way, we should reinstate our community plans. I don't know if you gentlemen know that in 2010 or thereabouts, they were suspended under the guise of them being too much of a financial burden given the downturn of 08. They're beautiful plans that ought to be reinstated. And in fact, as an example of a result of our recent town hall November 10th, one of the supervisors that attended, I understand, and there was, by the way, only one that attended, Tom Thurman, and I thank him for that, suggested that perhaps that's something that the supervisors should be revisiting. What about reinstituting these plans? The moratorium on them should be long gone, because that would then provide a tool for entering developers to sit down and have, just like we have here in Sedona, a tool to look at to say, what kind of alignment does this project need to have to be successful?
It would be a guiding document, and they are exactly what you said. Most of them were created at town halls. In other words, there was lots of involvement, lots of citizens involved. And sure enough, people ask, well, what about the community plan? Now, how does this fit in with that? But I do feel compelled to point out that El Rojo Grande was an example of maybe government and county government working the way it was supposed to. You had this, I don't want to use the usual media terms here, but outcry, certainly public involvement at a high
outcry
level.
Outcry is good.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
It was an outcry.
And they showed up at the planning and zoning.
We got a massive pushback here at the Democratic Perspective from folks who opposed
we did,
it.
We did,
massive
we did.
Involvement and
over
people 3, came to us.
3,000 letters. But, you know, gentlemen, we have to realize something else, too. It should not be required always to expect that the community is going to be up to,
right,
particularly in the times we're living in now, devoting their entire lives as residents to mounting those kinds of campaigns. And, oh, by the way, when they do mount those kinds of campaigns, as evidenced by our most recent failure as a community to be listened to regarding the Patel project, it passed unanimously. There was a great deal of opposition and a great number of people that attended that, and yet it passed. So
okay,
let's
Donna,
be careful
now,
about public input on that one.
There's legal issues here. In other words, if you have an area which has lots of commercial development, and a developer like the Patels comes along and wants to put a hotel in an area that is maybe zoned residential but has been commercial for decades, what's the basis that the supervisors can oppose it? If they are opposed, I'm not assuming that you're opposed to it, but if you are, what's the basis? Because there has to be a legal basis. This can't be, I just don't like it. I mean,
of
the kind of revolt we had in Sedona was, I don't want this, but they
and
had lots
worked.
Of arguments.
And that worked in that case. Absolutely, there are requirements that supervisors must align with. Now, they can't take individual property rights away, as I said, unless, of course, it's to the detriment of the community. And in the ways that detriment might be interpreted is fire, traffic, public safety issues, and that's a high priority. For example, in the VOC right now, there's a tremendous amount of angst about ingress, egress. There's one way in and one way out. And that's an infrastructure challenge. All I'm proposing and all many of the community residents in the VOC were proposing is, do we have the cart before the horse here? We don't even know how to escape a fire because there's one way in and one way out, and now we've got the element, we've got the storage unit, we have development going on all around. Should that be commercial or not? What kind of commercial it should be? That's a different kind of question
than
safety.
So the supervisors, when they voted to approve the project, a lot of the logic is this is Arizona and it's property right.
Yes.
And if you don't let the Patels build their hotel in an area where other people are building commercial products, you're depriving them of their private property rights. You're taking money out of their pocket. And that, I guess, was the supervisor's point of view. So unless you have a one of your categories that you're discussing, you can't just oppose it and just take their property rights. That's the way I understand it.
Absolutely.
Not an expert on
it. No one wants that to happen. I do think what residents want to have happen is a full, authentic engagement in a public participation process. And unfortunately, whatever the supervisors believe happened, the perception of the community members is that it didn't happen, that there wasn't the full engagement that they needed. There could have been much more mitigation so that, again, it's not that zero-sum game we're talking about. Issues and questions and legitimate concerns about how to get folks out if there is a major fire are still left unanswered.
So go ahead, Klaus.
Can I go back to the where you were talking about earlier, the town plan that was, I gather, suspended and maybe unsuspended? Does that have the force of law, or is that just a recommendation?
Well, right now it's called aspirational only. And as far as I'm concerned, as a private citizen, aspirational still means to me, just like with the All-American Road, we made a covenant. I don't care if we don't have a power of enforcement. We made a covenant to earn that distinction and, in partnership with the county, get over $5 million for the All-American Road. So while it doesn't have, at this moment, enforceability, it could have
if it were readopted. I'm ignorant. What's the All-American Road?
I thought you would never ask. A number of years ago, the village of Oak Creek, Big Park, sought in concert with the Yavapai County government to have the distinct designation earned by the federal government and thereby receiving some money for it, which we did, as an All-American Road. That means it has intrinsic qualities that are not represented anywhere else. And, in fact, we were the first in Arizona to get that distinction. Those three qualities are recreation, iconic views, and really the amazing gateway to our one-of-a-kind Red Rock country.
So let's ask Steve about he's been involved in these kind of issues for, what, decades, Steve? Is that fair to say?
Yep.
And you've been on the environmental side, but you're also involved in a lot of other ways. And how do these issues work out? I mean, what the county supervisors have control over is mostly zoning, right? Is that their major
control over a lot of things? But tool. when it comes to land use planning, that's one of the major tools. I want to relate to that, especially with respect to the community plans. Through my employments over the last several years in these organizations, I have been representative at Camp Verde's, Sedona's, Cottonwood's community plans. I have been involved fully in their development. And I can tell you that if you want to get political or talk about politics, politics runs in a couple different ways. One is voting, another is involvement. And the community plans came, and I find that involvement, community involvement, is more of a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month experience. As your voting is every 2 or 4 years. And it's a one-time go in and cast your one individual vote. But as a community involvement person and large groups of people coming together to create a plan for their community by statute required to have, and then passed by the county supervisors as accepted, and then to go before the supervisors and be told this is aspirational and this is outdated and we're not going to consider that, I find to be absolutely a slap in the face of the populace.
Give
these
us an example of that.
These people came together
happening.
And worked hard at it. We've been told this many, many times. I couldn't give you an example exact, you know, every time, but that's one. The other is there's a, for lack of a better term, a very large animal in the room, and it's called water. We're not supposed to talk about water.
Not supposed to talk about it.
Well, I got news for you.
Why is that?
Everybody wants to talk about water, and it's time these supervisors started listening to their constituents. Everybody wants to talk about water, and I find it an absolute travesty to pass it off to the state. This is a local issue. Politics is local and needs to be managed locally.
Didn't the state pass a law about water usage and being able to inquire in water usage so you can ask? We'll go to Donna, but didn't they sort of put a rule in about water and about asking developments so that they don't have to prove that they have enough water, am I correct, before they can build?
Well, you might be referring to the days when we looked at, as supervisors and a state, LB 1575. And I'm very proud of Clarkdale. What a great example. They're the, unfortunately, only community as a town. They were able to adopt it so that it required a proof of adequate water supply. Now, we can talk for a long time
That's a whole show right there.
Right there. Yeah. Whether there's teeth with Arizona Department of Water and so on and so forth to enforce that or what we mean by adequate water supply for 100 years. But I can tell you this, Steve's absolutely right. This should be an important job of a supervisor. Yes, we need to look at state statute. Water in land has to be something that can be answered better than, oh, we can't do anything about it. We have a legislature, and if the will of the people is for the supervisor to go down and ensure that we fix what's wrong statutorily so we can address these, don't tell me in America we can't do that.
Water is, like we've already alluded to, it's a huge subject. Klaus's question is great. You're bringing it up. But before we run out of time, and stop me if I'm wrong, I want to talk about Villa Bellagio and Spring Creek. Those are the headlines right now as far as developments go around here. What can we say about Villa Bellagio, which seems to be represent kind of what Steve's talking about, this company that seems unstoppable, and Spring Creek, which I think we know a little more about and seems a little... What do we
maybe
got?
Unstoppable, too, they say.
Well, you know, we don't know.
Where are those? Can you just say something about it for those who
Yeah, very little because they are both work in process. And so what we are saying today may change, as you all know very well, during the course of the review process. And one of the reasons that I asked Steve to come here is because he attended the Cornville Community Association, which is a very powerful group, thank goodness, in absence of community plan, to be able to speak with a loud voice about how they feel about, for example, Spring Creek. Now, the projection on that, actually both the projects, but the projection on Spring Creek, as I am told, is over 400 gallons of water a day. Now, I don't know what's a good number of gallons a day. None of us in this room do. Probably behooves us to start doing the science to find out, don't you think? But I do know this.
How many units do they plan to build?
It's over 2,000.
Yeah. There are over 2,000 housing units?
Right. Well, one type or another.
I know that it's a big issue down in Cornville, but I just wanted to get a little background information of people who are not going to. This is a huge development that's being planned.
Various types of housing.
Yeah, yes. that's my question. What kind of housing?
From manufactured to site built to you name it, RV pads, but the numbers in the 2,000.
Just to represent the Cornville people and me, for that matter, see it as simple. Hey, we got zoning. We got one unit for 2 acres. End of story. See ya. That's it. You want to build something, build one unit for 2 acres. And, of course, there's not enough money in that.
Right. And here's something very important. The Arizona Department of Water, Game and Fish, and Coconino National Forest has weighed in on that particular project, which is perhaps the reason that I am being told it's at least currently pulled. All of them raising great concerns about endangered species, running through Spring Creek where those endangered species have been transported to preserve them, vineyards that are going to interrupt and leach, perhaps, into the waters.
That's very close to news, and we don't do that much around here. Where did you hear it was pulled?
Through community members saying that they've just gotten a recent report on it. I have not had it confirmed yet, but it'll be very interesting to see, particularly in light of these three major governmental entities weighing in with grave paid
and I do think people who are interested in this issue have to understand this is a huge developer, which if their initial plans are rejected, is going to come back with some variant to try to get their project done.
That was my comment earlier, Steve, with the example with El Rojo Grande. They were willing to mitigate and do things. The point of the matter was that the public outcry was sufficient to say this is an inappropriate, non-fit for our community. It was advocated that it was going to be workforce development for housing, for heaven's sakes. These are landlocked seniors who would have had to pay rent, ever-increasing rent, on trailers that they purchased through this company, and so they held the mortgage. And frankly, I think that's just a stain on good thinking and good leadership, and that will not happen on my watch.
Let's ask Steve to address the issue.
Just briefly, that model, economic model, flies in the face of private property rights. You're buying a structure, thinking you're buying a home, and then you have to rent where it sits.
It seems like almost, I won't it call is, it a scam, but it's headed
it
that
is,
direction,
it's
right?
It's a big scam. It's an absolute ripoff.
So,
there's no question about it.
Not
especially if you look at the history of these people.
So this does not make a good neighbor in terms of a community. And this is what Cornville is so very concerned about. People live in Cornville because it is Cornville.
Yeah.
We want to be rural. We want to remain rural. We don't want lots of roads. We don't want lots of fire engines going by all the time. We don't want lots of people. And, maybe some people will say, well, you got yours. Now you can't let anybody else in. But, again, this needs to be in a balanced way. And our opinion, the Cornville people's opinion is that if it's not broke, don't fix it. The zoning is the way we like it. There's no need to change it.
But that's the charge, isn't it, Steve? People are going to, and Donna, and people are going to say, I arrived in Sedona or Cornville. Now I want to close the door and let anybody else in.
It's
right?
Called NIMBY, right?
Yeah.
Right. And don't you think that time has passed? Haven't we heard enough about 21st century robust, sustainable, smart economies? For goodness sakes, there's a company once again in Camp Verde called Terra Firma, and they are looking to build smart, tiny homes doing several things. Smaller footprint. There's 7 acres there where they're going to put these smaller, smarter, because of the technology that they'll put into the homes while they are teaching young people to stay in Camp Verde and learn the trade of manufacturing. And so here we go. There's lots of examples that we can be doing all over the Verde Valley.
Absolutely. We'll talk about Villa Bellagio. Hopefully we'll have you guys back because it sounds like it's going to be another. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, another casual episode. As I drive, when I drove my dirt bike down Dry Creek Road in 1973 and fell off of it.
We're sorry.
Yeah.
It was
that was a brain injury, Mac?
That explains everything. Now I know.
Moving on. Where's my lawyer over here? It was a dirt road, and there was no development. I have to admit, when I drive down Dry Creek Road, I don't see a lot of development. Whatever they've developed, and has a crap load of development out there, but they've done a really good job of keeping, at least I don't have to look at it. So however that was developed, whether it was developed in a non-visual way, we do want to tell people with a little bit of time we have left, we want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks. We want to thank Donna. We want to thank Steve.
Yavapai Democratic Party.
We want to thank the Yavapai Democratic
Party. I think Donna has some concluding remarks.
I think we got very little time.
Absolutely. Please go to my website, DonnaMichaelsForSupervisor.com, and my Facebook, Donna for District 3 Supervisor. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm so grateful.
Yes, thank you, Donna. Well, there is a lot to talk about here. Because of this moment in time with the development, and we have these, as far as I'm concerned, two experts here. Donna Michaels, Steve Estes, talk about the environment, talk about development. It's on everybody's minds. It's on every newspaper's front page. So this is kind of where we're at for now. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks. Their breakfast on Thursday, third Thursday, we'll have Elia Ziegelbaum and Mike Weiser. That was their last breakfast, actually. I'm sorry, this breakfast is past.
I think they're having Alexandra Sola from the ACLU next
week. Very good.
She's a great speaker. She's been up to Sedona many times. She's been head of the ACLU.
Full of great information. Okay,
Arizona.
Don't forget our website, vvid.org. You can catch this broadcast and all our broadcasts at vvid.org, the Verde Valley Independent Democrats.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.